Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. December 10th, 2020. My thoughts on Twitter December 10th, 2020. The creator performs the breakage on his own, and we ask him for connection. In all of these actions we feel the creator, understand what he wants to say through an encoded program. We feel how through the exits and entries of the light, the Creator teaches us how to approach Him, closer and closer. The most important thing is to always strive for unity, to preserve unity. From above we are being divided, but we unite. Therein lies our reciprocal work with the Creator. He tears us apart, and we connect. He tears us apart again, and we reconnect again. We have to be aware of our connection with the Creator in this work. A person must exert every effort to try to reveal the Creator, who fills the entire universe. This is possible only through the ten, by disappearing and dissolving in the friends, getting absorbed inside them so much that you'll feel how the Creator stands behind all the friends, waiting for you to reveal Him. My article in Newsmax, Hanukkah offers timely reminder of need for unity. On Hanukkah, which begins tonight, Jews celebrate their victory over the Seleucid Empire, which attempted to entrench the Hellenistic culture and belief system among the Jews in the land of Israel. This is the going narrative. However, this epos is not quite what happened. Although everyone knows that the Maccabean Revolt, whose victory we celebrate on Hanukkah, was a civil war between the Hasmonean family and their adherents against Hellenistic Jews, we conveniently tell ourselves that we fought against the Greeks. The Seleucid Empire practiced and promoted the Greek culture of Hellenism. The Seleucids joined the war on the side of the Hellenists only toward the end, but for much of the war, it was Jews against Jews. The war among the Jews stands for much more than a struggle for power. It is a clash of ideals, of paradigms, of perceptions, of reality. Judah Maccabee, the third son in the Hasmonean family, was the commander of the rebels against the Hellenists, but his whole family participated in key positions. The Hasmoneans were staunch believers in the ancient Jewish tenet of solidarity and mutual responsibility being the foundation of the nation. They believed that it was the role of the Jews to practice love your neighbor as yourself and be a light unto nations by setting an example of unity above differences. Contrary to that, the Hellenists championed the Greek culture of worship of the self. The Hellenists put the ego at the center, the Hasmoneans put serving the community at the center of their wishes. The struggle was not an internal Jewish squabble, but a fight over the vocation of the Jewish people, to save the world through its example. If the Jews relinquish their commitment to unity, then what is the purpose of the existence of Judaism altogether? Worse yet, if there are no Jews to unite and set an example, how will the world find unity? The Hasmoneans believed wholeheartedly in the prophecy of Isaiah 42:6, "And I will appoint you as a covenant to the people, as a light unto nations," and the words of King Solomon, Prof. 10:12, "Hate stirs strife, and love will cover all crimes." They saw it as their vocation to illustrate how love can be more important to people than hate, how they can rise above it in unity and peace. The Hellenists, who tried to ingrain the opposite approach, that the ego is king and we should serve ourselves, were therefore not only their worst enemies, but as they saw it, the enemies of humanity. The Hasmoneans did not expect the Seleucids to adopt their faith and principles, but also they would not allow their culture to be overrun by the Greek culture, since then there would be no one to perpetuate the mission that the Jews were given at the foot of Mount Sinai, to unite as one man with one heart and thereby be a light unto nations. The Hasmoneans won the war and reinstalled their culture, and to this day, we celebrate their victory. However, their victory was short-lived. Hellenism, they learned, was not an external enemy, but a wily serpent lurking within. Soon after their victory, they, too, began to lose their moral standing and their sons became increasingly corrupt. In the end, the Hellenistic culture took over the entire land of Israel as the Romans, whose culture derived from the Greeks, conquered the land and exiled the Jews for 2 millennia. In fact, even today, although Jews are purportedly the sovereign in Israel once more, the culture of the land is still Hellenism, and there is no trace of mutual responsibility or solidarity. If the people of Israel remain this way, they will lose the land once more, since there is no need for them if not for the purpose of the creation, to be a light of unity to the nations. Israel does not need the patronage of any country. Its strength lies not in its army or economy, but in its unity. If it lacks unity, the backing of powers will sustain it only for so long. But if the people unite, they will not need anyone's protection, since they will have no enemies. Today, no commodity is more required than unity, yet no commodity is more scarce. Its sole producers are the people of Israel, and they are busy fighting among themselves both in Israel and around the world. As the world looks desperately for solutions to its escalating conflicts, it will turn its eyes to the Jews and ask, "Why are you making us fight?" Then, if the Jews do not remember their covenant, to be a light unto nations, they will be crushed once more. But if they do unite, they will shine the light of unity throughout the world, and all of humanity will celebrate the victory of the Maccabees, the joy of solidarity, over the Greeks, the reign of egoism. The middle line is the Creator's patent. The middle line is the Creator's patent, a divine invention. Indeed, two forces of nature are combined in the middle line, positive and negative, bestowal and reception, love and hate, rejection and attraction, everything that exists in reality, both in the upper world of bestowal and in the lower world of receiving. In this connection, they do not cancel each other but try to complement each other, which would seem impossible. After all, how can fire and water, hatred and love, connect? How can two opposites live and exist together in the middle line so that there will not be anything unnecessary in the universe? How is it possible to create such a perfect picture where it is impossible to remove or add a single detail? We, in our world, do not understand this. People always want to destroy all the bad and have only good in their lives. But this is not the right approach. Kabbalah is called the hidden wisdom because it teaches how to combine all the opposites in nature. One does not suppress the other, but through their combination, integration, they understand that they cannot exist without each other and that only by their right combination is perfection achieved. Humanity is looking for all possible forms and methods of existence to achieve peace. This is not easy to do even between two people. Peace and perfection are the prerogative of the Creator and what man lacks. The Creator created us with an evil inclination and gave us a little bit of good so that we would look for how to combine all this. And when we finally despair from the impossibility of combining these two opposites, we gradually begin to realize that a third force is missing. We do not need to cancel one of the forces as politicians and other people try to do, each in their own egoism. If we develop correctly, we will see that there is nothing bad or good in the world. It is only necessary to bring good and evil together, and in their correct combination, we will discover the third state, perfection, woven from both of them. That is why it is said, "Man and woman, if they are rewarded, the Shekhinah is between them." Man and woman are two opposites, like fire and water. But perfection is possible when the Shekhinah, the presence of the Creator, is revealed between them. The Creator is the third line, which is revealed precisely when trying to work correctly with two opposite lines. Bestowal without reception and reception without bestowal cannot exist. The correct connection between them is the wisdom of Kabbalah, because this connection builds a spiritual vessel for receiving the light where there is a depth of desire and holiness, everything necessary for the revelation of the third line, the Creator. The middle line is the revelation of the Creator. It begins with Keter, which is higher than all the Sephirot, higher than creation. Then it continues in Sefiradat, created by the connection of Hochma and Bina in the Sefirah of Jacob. Then, in the connection of Hesed and Gvura, in Sefirah Tiferet, which will be the middle line in the body. It ends at the end of the Pat Tsuf, in the connection of Netzach and Hod, Sefirah Yesod. So we must teach, within oneself and within the ten, find, clarify, and build this middle line in which we will reveal the Creator. Everyone should be both above and below everyone. That is, one becomes flexible in relation to one's friends, ready to do anything to lead to global connection. As a result, we become so flexible that we only think about how to support and strengthen our friends, and feel how the group is being shaped more and more correctly thanks to my efforts. Everyone who cares so much about the group builds himself as a middle line, directs himself exactly at the Creator, and reveals him within himself. But he came to the middle line precisely because he wanted to join the group, support it, and correctly perceive all its positive and negative states. These opposites should not create a short circuit and should not move infinitely away from each other, but they should be so close that the middle line system is built between them. The middle line does not exist in nature, it must be constructed by us, as it is said, "You have made me." Coming closer to the middle line begins when I realize that I am nothing without the friends and the group. When I come to the lesson preparation, I feel dead, empty, without feelings, unprepared. But when I hear my friends talking, waking each other up, I wake up too. It is through their awakening that I am reborn. This is how my day begins, and I become more and more ready to meet the Ten and the Creator within it. This is what practical Kabbalah consists of, building a middle line, a common place between us. And in this common area, we discover all our opposite qualities and states that the Creator has sent down to us, from above and build a spiritual vessel from them in which we reveal Him. From the first part of the daily Kabbalah lesson December 6, 2020, middle line. My new article on LinkedIn 2020, an odd, yet wonderful year. As a Kabbalist, I think that 2020 has been the best year in all the years that I recall. It is the year when humanity began to shake off and get rid of everything it had in the former life, chasing after money, excessive self-indulgence, and other forms of taking where our only thought was about reception, and nothing else. In this year, nature came and slapped us, commanded us, to stop, and we had no choice but to go home and quarantine ourselves. The pandemic forced us to think about life, or at least get rid of the previous life, and this is why it's been so good. For humanity, I think that 2020 will be remembered as an odd year, the year of the blow. It is a year that stopped everyone's regular life, when people went to work, entertained themselves, traveled, and so forth. I think people will remember that all of a sudden, this blow came, the special virus that forbade them to come out of the house, run around wherever they want, shut down movie theaters, even parks, occasionally, restaurants, and bars. In other words, the virus shut down the rat race that forced us to look at others and want to do the same. The drive to go to bars, movies, travel, and so forth is not inherent in us. What is inherent in us is the drive to be like everyone else. If I see that others are doing something and they tell me that it's good, I am compelled to do the same. We are a herd. But who is the shepherd? The shepherds are the people with money and power who want to manipulate us into going to movie theaters, bars, and restaurants, to travel and engage in various activities that are lucrative for them, and which give them power. This way of life is over, thankfully. We will not be as before. Even if we see people trying to return to the previous way of life, it won't work. It won't be the same, won't feel the same, and even if we travel, dine out, and do everything we did before, we won't be able to enjoy it like we did. It will seem pathetic, empty, lame. Nature is teaching us to change our relation to our lives, to natural treasures, and to human society. Bit by bit, we will see that the COVID-19 pandemic is changing us. The year 2020 is indeed a very special year. It is the year of the birth of the new humanity. My new article on LinkedIn is Hanukkah, a Jewish holiday? On Hanukkah, which will begin this coming Thursday, Jews celebrate their victory over the Seleucid Empire, which attempted to entrench the Hellenistic culture and belief system among the Jews in the land of Israel. This is the going narrative. However, this epos is not quite what happened. Although everyone knows that the Maccabean War, whose victory we celebrate on Hanukkah, was a civil war between the Hasmonean family and their adherents against Hellenistic Jews, we conveniently tell ourselves that we fought against the Greeks. The Seleucid Empire practiced and promoted the Greek culture of Hellenism. The Seleucids joined the war on the side of the Hellenists only toward the end, but for much of the war, it was Jews against Jews. The war among the Jews stands for much more than a struggle for power. It is a clash of ideals, of paradigms, of perceptions of reality. Judah Maccabee, the third son in the Hasmonean family, was the commander of the rebels against the Hellenists, but his whole family participated in key positions. The struggle was not an internal Jewish squabble, but a fight over the vocation of the Jewish people, to save the world through its example. If the Jews relinquish their commitment to unity, then what is the purpose of the existence of Judaism altogether? Worse yet, if there are no Jews to unite and set an example, how will the world find unity? The Hasmoneans believed wholeheartedly in the prophecy of Isaiah 42:6, "And I will appoint you as a covenant to the people, as a light unto nations," and the words of King Solomon, Prof. 10:12, "Hate stirs strife, and love will cover all crimes." They saw it as their vocation to illustrate how love can be more important to people than hate, how they can rise above it in unity and peace. The Hellenists, who tried to ingrain the opposite approach, that the ego is king and we should serve ourselves, were therefore not only their worst enemies, but as they saw it, the enemies of humanity. The Hasmoneans did not expect the Seleucids to adopt their faith and principles, but they would also not allow their culture to be overrun by the Greek culture, since then there would be no one to perpetuate the mission that the Jews were given at the foot of Mount Sinai, to unite as one man with one heart and thereby be a light unto nations. The Hasmoneans won the war and reinstalled their culture, and to this day, we celebrate their victory. However, their victory was short-lived. Hellenism, they learned, was not an external enemy, but a wily serpent lurking within. Soon after their victory, they, too, began to lose their moral standing and their sons became increasingly corrupt. In the end, the Hellenistic culture took over the entire land of Israel as the Romans, whose culture derived from the Greeks, conquered the land and exiled the Jews for two millennia. In fact, even today, although Jews are purportedly the sovereign in Israel once more, the culture of the land is still Hellenism, and there is no trace of mutual responsibility or solidarity. If the people of Israel remain this way, they will lose the land once more, since there is no need for them if not for the purpose of the creation, to be a light of unity to the nations. Israel does not need the patronage of any country. Its strength lies not in its army or economy, but in its unity. If it lacks unity, the backing of powers will sustain it only for so long. But if the people unite, they will not need anyone's protection, since they will have no enemies. Today, no commodity is more required than unity, yet no commodity is more scarce. Its sole producers are the people of Israel, and they are busy fighting among themselves both in Israel and around the world. As the world looks desperately for solutions to its escalating conflicts, it will turn its eyes to the Jews and ask, "Why are you making us fight?" Then, if the Jews do not remember their covenant, to be a light unto nations, they will be crushed once more. But if they do unite, they will shine the light of unity throughout the world, and all of humanity will celebrate the victory of the Maccabees, the joy of solidarity, over the Greeks, the reign of egoism. My new article on LinkedIn, Imagine a Better World, It Can Become Reality. John Lennon, who was murdered 40 years ago today, imagined a common world without borders, without greed and without hunger, one world that is all love, and his message spoke to the hearts of masses of people. The idea of a more tolerant, equalitarian and embracing world still resonates today. A dream of global love lives in everyone, so even in this time when everything is exploited for commercial purposes in a rough and alienated world, we still prefer to see movies where love prevails and to hear mostly love songs. All of culture all over the world revolves around the theme of love, and if hatred occasionally appears, it comes as an ugly counterpoint to contrast the beauty of love. It is natural. Every person has no more inner desire than a bond of love. It causes us to aspire to it through all the materialistic layers of the time and environment we live in. So the world Lennon imagined is not utopian. A world full of love is a beautiful and good goal, and it should find its place among us, if we first just aim for it. Not a love of flowers woven into the hair and birds chirping. There is nothing wrong with them, but a deeper and realistic experience of love is built with the core material of humans. It is called hatred. That is how the world was created, with two sides of the same coin, love and hatred, interacting all the time until they achieve balance. Love begins with a situation where two people reject and even hate each other, and without erasing the differences and ignoring the gaps, they build a mutual agreement on top of their divergences. This is a technique that exists in nature called love will cover all crimes. One who manages to love like this without expecting anything in return, like nature does, will always have a burning heart full of joy of life. We do not have to wait for others to start loving us, someday, it all depends entirely on the person. If we want to be unconditionally loving, if we learn how to get out of ourselves into others, then beyond all imagination we will discover a world without limits for ourselves, a world without greed and without hunger. Such a person will find the inner power that sustains the world and connects everything into one. Separated by computer screens. Question: currently nature has separated us, with the coronavirus as well as computer screens. We are developing a kind of virtual reality. What is the next stage of the communication level between us? Answer: when we understand that in the correct connection between us, not the internet connection, but with corrected feelings, we can create a form of unity that will allow us to feel the hidden layer of nature, then we will begin to reveal nature in its true form. Question: it is clear that physical communication between people is much harder than virtual because it requires energy and attention. It is much easier to contact others through screens. Once we learn to communicate through screens, will we be able to communicate physically on a different level? Answer: maybe. I hope that this is what will happen. I can see from the spread of Kabbalah in the world that this is how we are developing. From Cab TV's Communication Skills, October 7, 2020. My new article on LinkedIn Racing Right. From the very first competition, between Esau and Jacob, we've seen people competing against each other. We know that competition can give purpose to life, and who doesn't love winners? But we also know that competition can be destructive to the losers, and sometimes also to the winners. Even great athletes are often also depressed, sometimes even clinically. Michael Phelps, Serena Williams, and Ali Raisman are just some of the more famous names of countless athletes who have struggled with depression despite making history in their sports. In fact, an NCAA survey of athletes found that 30% reported feeling depressed over the course of a year. So is competition good or bad? Like everything else, it's good, if you do it properly. competition can be a positive impetus for development and growth or restrain and impede our progress, depending on the goal of the competition. When we compete in order to glorify ourselves, it is egoistic competition. In this type of contest, you are only as good as your latest triumph. Such competition cannot lead to anything good because we all lose some time, and we all grow old or tired, or someone outsmarts us. But we can partake in a completely different kind of competition, where the one who gives the most is the winner. In such a contest, the more fiercely we compete, the closer we become to one another. The grand prize, of course, goes to the one who loves his neighbor as himself. In antiquity, the people of Israel developed their nationhood based on exactly that kind of competitiveness. When they were more successful, they grew closer and stronger. When they were less successful and could not overcome their natural resentment to giving, they grew more hateful and therefore weaker as a nation, and usually lost to some external enemy. According to our sages, this is how the two temples were ruined. A competition of giving may seem far-fetched to us, right now, but it is so only because our current society doesn't advocate unity, but separation and worship of the self, so anything that smells of giving seems repugnant. If, however, our purpose were to form a cohesive society based on mutual responsibility and solidarity, as did the ancient Israelites, a competition of giving would be the most natural kind, and the selfish kind would seem repulsive. The latter kind, which idolizes the self, is the kind that was practiced in ancient Rome. It is the Hellenistic kind, not the Hebrew kind. Since the ruin of the Second Temple, the Hellenistic mindset has dominated the world. Now that people are beginning to see that self-indulgence can get you only so far, it is time we tried the other way, the Hebrew way, giving and bonding, loving others and connecting above differences. The sooner we adopt this kind of competition, the better it is for all of us. My new article on LinkedIn: why Israel is going for yet another election. Israel, it seems, is going for yet another general election in what seems to be a never-ending series. It's not as if these campaigns yield very different results each time, but the political deadlock seems to leave politicians with no choice but to go for one election after the other, knowing they will solve nothing. And it's true, they won't solve anything, because when politicians want separation so that they can have their piece of the pie, nothing will be resolved. Only when a leader who genuinely wants to unite the entire people rises, Israel will be out of the impasse. Since its beginning, Israel adopted a version of the British parliamentary system and attempted to implement it in the new country. But what works for other nations will not work for us. Just as ancient Jewish law was fundamentally different from that of its neighbors in antiquity, so now we must nurture a system that serves our purpose in being a sovereign nation. Israel was formed out of outcasts from various nations and tribes. These castaways rejected their faiths and traditions and joined Abraham's group, since he established his group based on the principle of unity above all differences. Abraham maintained that although we are all different, and although we harbor hatred for each other, we must cultivate the element of mercy among us, and crown it as our prime goal. This is why Abraham symbolizes the quality of mercy. Abraham did not deny the hatred among the members of his group, but stressed that only if we build above it the quality of mercy, we will build a strong nation. Centuries later, King Solomon phrased that principle succinctly when he said, "Hate stirs strife, and love will cover all crimes." Prof. 10:12. Israel's leadership was always about unity, not about division. The Mishnah, Sanhedrin 4:3, writes that the Sanhedrin was as a round semicircle, so they would see each other. The book Likutei Halakot explains what these words mean. The love is mainly that they saw each other, for they could not tolerate one not seeing one's friend. The vitality is mainly through peace and love among Israel, which is regarded as seeing one another. This is the meaning of what our sages said, company or death, for vitality is mainly through love of friends. Since when there is no love and there is separation, it is impossible to receive vitality and it is regarded as death. For the separation between each other is regarded as death. That was the system of governance of our forefathers. If we compare this to our current system, we can see how far we are from where we should be. Israel has no place among the nations unless it functions the way Abraham had intended. If we don't, the nations turn against us, as they have so many times before, and thereby force us to unite. But temporal unity will give us nothing more than a break from the pressure. If we want to resolve Israel's problems, we have to start functioning as a spiritual nation, the way we were meant to function, a nation that spreads the light of unity above differences, and thereby becomes a light unto nations. In the current system, we will keep bickering until we start fighting one another physically. Before the fall of the Second Temple, the Romans put a siege around Jerusalem and waited for the Jews inside to kill each other and make their conquest that much easier. By not realizing why we are here and what we need to do, and by insisting that only we are right and they are wrong, instead of trying to forge unity above our differences and hatred, we are doing to ourselves what our forefathers did to themselves back then. Clearly, nothing good will come out of this. Work on egoism. Question. There is the so-called Ringelmann effect when, as the number of group members increases, the average individual contribution decreases. Let's say you and I can each lift 100 kilograms. If we are together, we lift much less, and if there are 8 of us, then we will hoist about 50% of what everyone can lift. This is called social laziness. Moreover, the larger the number in the group, the more this effect manifests. How can this data be used to unite the group? Answer: we need to show people how egoistic we are and how much we must give ourselves entirely to the general ascent in order to ultimately completely raise everything that we can. Comment: anyways, when we are in the 10 and you give us some task, but I am personally not responsible for its implementation, my activity decreases. My response: this occurs because you rely on others and wait for them to do it. This is the law. It is necessary to work on our egoism so that each one of us wants to do it alone, even though the task is designed for 5 people. Then, you will get a much better result than you did before. From CapTV's Communication Skills, September 25, 2020. When will the Olympic Games take place? In the news, BBC News, the postponed Tokyo Olympic Games will go ahead next year with or without COVID, the vice president of the International Olympic Committee says. John Coates confirmed that the Olympics would start on 23 July next year, calling them the Games that conquered COVID. They were originally scheduled to start in July 2020. But were postponed due to COVID-19 fears. Now very much these will be the games that conquered COVID, the light at the end of the tunnel. Question: what do you think about his claims? Answer: what should he say? He needs to show everyone that they are inspiring and moving toward this cause, building, and so on. Forward. Question: does this mean that they don't feel the reason for the virus? Answer: they don't even feel how weak they are. Comment: they feel that they are strong. My response: they will stand and weep like small kids who are looking for their mom. Question: is this where COVID-19 is leading us? Answer: yes, and much more. Question: so that we will all feel like rags? Answer: yes, how else? Only then will we begin to listen. Comment: but what we see is the opposite reaction everywhere. We will defeat the virus. We will find a vaccine. My response: look at how you bring up kids. You bring them to a state in which they understand that they need you. Then you tell them what to do, and without a choice, they listen to you. A child cries but still does what needs to be done because he understands that he has no other choice. This is what the generation of selfishness is built on. Question: does this mean that we are constantly living in a state in which the Creator is above us, and we are inside Him, and He leads us, from one place to another? Answer: yes. Question: this is how we have been living throughout history, and this is how we continue to live now. So will the Olympic Games take place or not? What do you think? Answer: if we behave, they will take place, and if we misbehave, they will not. Question: what appeal would you write to the upper force on behalf of the IOG? We would very much like the games to take place. What should we write? Answer: I would write, touch the fans so that they will understand that they need to grow wiser, to understand the conditions under which the games can take place. The true Olympic Games are when at least during the games we cease the mutual hatred and the rejection we feel toward each other. Question: and do we have to feel so before the games can start? Answer: yes, let's prepare for this during the coming year. Question: so will this be the preparation for the Olympic Games? Answer: yes. Question: can you imagine that the IOG would write such an appeal to the Creator? Answer: they should start by putting a stop to all the military operations around the world during this time. Comment: this could be a nice appeal to humanity. My response: we know that the true Olympic Games will take place only when humanity will want to put an end, at least for some time, to all the wars, conflicts, and struggles, and will want to participate in the right struggle, not with all kinds of viruses and forbidden stimulants, but by expressing its concern directly, openly, rationally, and honestly. This could be amazing. But in order to do that, we need to totally change our attitude to the games, to the world, to war, to everything. What kind of games could there be today without stimulants? Who would compete today without such drugs? Today, entire labs and institutions operate in order to provide an athlete with a pill that on the one hand will not be traceable, and on the other hand will help him break forward, even if he may later die as a result. Are these games? This is disgusting. Question: so is this the reason that we are not allowed to get near the games, since these are no longer games and no longer Olympic Games? Answer: yes, and even the declaration of John Coates, that will go ahead next year with or without COVID. These will be the games that conquered COVID. How can that be? Who are you dealing with? You are not even aware of the greatness of the games themselves, not of the games that should be, not of the fact that they are actually above human nature. The Olympic Games were given to us in order to raise man above his competitive inclination, so that friendship and the right attitude toward each other will actually win. Here, however, everything is built on the opposite idea. See the hatred that is invoked between all the nations before the games. It is a good thing that these games do not take place. From CAB TV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, September 14, 2020. Sin: deviation from the movement toward the goal. The wisdom of Kabbalah speaks about the purpose of a person in this world, in this life, what we should do with ourselves in order to come to the ideal realization of our existence. We don't know how to live. We see how people exist for no reason, aimlessly, all the while rambling around the world and life. Kabbalah offers to make our life purposeful so that in the end we can reach the state for which our universe, the entire creation, and we were created. Deviation from this goal is called sin. Here everything depends on a person, on one's upbringing and education, on how one perceives oneself and the purpose of creation, how much one knows and owns it. Ordinary people, who have no idea about this, do not ask such questions and do not think about what actually is a sin. For them, sin is bad behavior, theft, some misdemeanor, etc. This is also true. But the fact is that they do not know whether they are realizing themselves correctly or not, whether they are moving toward the right goal. Therefore, it is very important to educate people that all human actions are evaluated according to the movement toward the goal of its creation. This is the main point relative to which sin or, conversely, a commandment or good deed is measured. And if we clearly know and understand that this is how we should go forward, then based on the goal itself and moving toward it, we can already talk about actions that lead us, in the shortest, optimal way to this goal. Such actions are called commandments because, from the point of view of nature, we are commanded to move in this way. This we find out from the structure of the entire universe. Conversely, those actions that turn us away or even back, and move us away from achieving the goal are called sin. Our goal is to understand the Creator who reveals Himself in the measure of our equivalence of form to Him. Therefore, any of our actions aimed at resembling Him are called commandments, good and correct. The equivalence of form lies in the fact that we have acquired the qualities of the Creator. Then we will be closer to Him. The Creator's attributes are bestowal and love. Therefore, love your neighbor as yourself is the main commandment of our development. From CAB TV's Spiritual States, November 19, 2018. Hide and seek with the Creator. Question: what is double and single concealment? Answer: we exist in a world where only one upper force acts, called the Creator. It influences us, controls us, and we are completely at its mercy. But initially, we do not feel it. If a person begins to strive for its revelation, then he comes to study the wisdom of Kabbalah and joins in spiritual work, the purpose of which is to attain the Creator. We are created so that in this world, in this life, the Creator will be revealed by everyone altogether. When one tries to attain the Creator, one begins to feel that he is actually concealed. Before that, he did not even have such a concept as the concealment of the Creator. Talk to someone on the street, they do not need to reveal the Creator, learn something about him, or feel him. So, the Creator plays hide and seek with us. By realizing that the Creator is hidden from him, a person tries to at least feel where he is hiding and how. Gradually, from complete double concealment of the Creator, he gets closer to the single one, when he begins to feel that the Creator is hiding here and there. This is determined in relation to his feelings. For example, if I feel bad in this world and, of course, all my feelings are based on how the Creator treats me, how he determines my state, then I say that he is hidden from me by a double screen. When I come to a single concealment of the Creator, I see that the Creator is hidden from me, and this concealment of him from me is the cause of my bad state. Question: can we say that a double concealment is a concealment both in the mind and in the heart, and a single concealment is only in the heart? Answer: yes. In the double concealment, I do not feel him at all, either in my mind or in my heart. Rather, I feel only some negative effects on myself. With a single concealment, in my mind I understand that the Creator is good and does good, that he exists, but because of my egoistic nature, I cannot justify him yet. From CAB TV's Spiritual States, January 14, 2019.